I know that most everyone here is fully aware of our family's current situation. We're in the process of a major move for our family, headed down to Houston very shortly. We've actually found a house that will suit our needs, and we're very thankful for everyone's prayers about that. So many have told us just how much you've been praying for us. We really do appreciate that very much. Throughout the entire process, we've seen God's steady hand guiding us all along the way. But with all of this looming in the near future, you can imagine what's been going on in our home over the past few weeks. We've been getting things ready for this big move, packing up tons of boxes, moving furniture around, all of those things that you would expect. We've lived in this house for 17 and a half years, and with this move, I've come to realize something very important. We have too much stuff. I mean, there's no way around it. We just have too much stuff. And I'm not pointing a finger at any one individual in our family. I think each one of us in the Ellis family is guilty of this, having too much stuff. I started having visions of those shows you see on television. There was a woman out in Arizona. They call her a hoarder. She was a very serious hoarder. When they came in to clean up her home, they found 60 cats in one house. 19 of those cats were dead. She was living with 19 dead cats found underneath piles of trash and rubbish, and apparently she had no idea that they were even there. There was an old episode on the BBC featuring a man named Edmund Trabus. He was short-tempered and stubborn, unwilling to admit that he had a problem with hoarding. Trabus filled up his five-bedroom home, which was located in London. He filled that up with essentially what we would call trash. He took items out of his neighbor's trash cans. He collected homegrown vegetables that he'd bring home in bags. He would then leave them in his home and allow them to rot. He brought home for sale signs that he collected. He even had a mortuary table. He had a mortuary table in his home. His hoarding habits were discovered when his neighbor started complaining about a terrible smell coming from his home. It was in such bad shape, he had to use a ladder to get in and out. Imagine that. There was so much clutter that in order for him to get inside his house, he had to use a ladder. Now, our situation at the Ellis household is not nearly as bad as any of that. Nothing like that at all. I'm doing much better now. But when we first started going through all of these things, it was extremely overwhelming. I kept asking myself, do I really have to move all of this stuff? Am I really going to have to do that? Over the years, I've been guilty of just tossing stuff in a closet, closing the door, and forgetting about it. Or the attic. I'll just throw something up in the attic, out of sight, out of mind, right? Well, it's no longer out of mind. It's in the way, and I've got to deal with it. I think it can all be summed up with just one word: clutter. We have so much clutter. And again, I don't say that to hurt anyone's feelings. I'm not trying to pick on any one particular person in our family. But it's true, we have clutter. Now, to be fair, we have decluttered a lot. We've thrown a lot of stuff away, donated tons to the local Goodwill, made several trips to the Goodwill in recent weeks, dropping off donations. But it was an eye-opening experience just to see how much clutter there actually was. And you know what? I suspect that some of you out there have your fair share of clutter, too. Do you have some clutter? With this so fresh on my mind recently, I thought it might be good to talk about today. Let's talk about clutter. But we're not going to talk about 23 boxes of dishware. We're not going to talk about a box full of school yearbooks and report cards from 1989, or a varsity letterman jacket that's been sitting in the back of the closet collecting dust for years. Now, let's talk about some spiritual principles. Do you have anything that's piled up and sitting in the way? Do you have any clutter? So to give you an outline of where we'll be going today, I'd like to look at some examples of clutter, and then we'll discuss some ways of dealing with and removing that clutter. I want to begin in Mark chapter 10. If you'll turn over to Mark chapter 10, we'll start off by exploring an account of somebody having stuff in the way. Mark chapter 10, picking it up in verse 17. Jesus is traveling across the region of Judea, and where we're going to be picking it up, he's going along the road here. Mark chapter 10, verse 17. Now, as he was going on the road, one came running, knelt before him, and asked him, "Good teacher, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life?" Verse 18. So Jesus said to him, "Why do you call me good? No one's good but one, that is God. You know the commandments. Do not commit adultery. Do not murder. Do not steal. Do not bear false witness. Do not defraud. Honor your father and your mother." And he answered and said to him, "Teacher, all these things I've kept from my youth." 21. Then Jesus, looking at him, loved him. I'll stop here. You know, I just love how this verse brings it to life for us. You may just read right over these words, but think about it just for a second. Picture Jesus Christ looking right at this individual, seeing right through all of that clutter, because he did have some clutter. We'll get to that momentarily. But Jesus saw right through it, and it says that he loved him. That's so encouraging to me personally. He doesn't chastise this young man. He doesn't ridicule him or accost him for having this clutter. He just addresses the issue. Continuing on with the verse. Then Jesus, looking at him, loved him and said to him, "One thing you lack. Go your way, sell whatever you have and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven. And come, take up the cross and follow me." But he was sad at this word, and went away sorrowful, for he had great possessions. From what we read here in this passage, it appears that this man did not follow the instructions that Christ gave him. He went away sorrowful. Perhaps he later changed his mind, but from what we see here, he did not want to let go of those physical possessions. They were just too important for him. They were in the way. It was clutter that negatively impacted his relationship with God. This is a physical example of a person's clutter getting in the way. Apparently, this young man would rather cling to those physical possessions than follow Jesus Christ. When you say that out loud, it doesn't sound very good, does it? Put yourself in this situation here. I mean, really, think about this from your own perspective. Jesus Christ standing there looking right at you, loving you, and gently telling you, "Hey, this stuff has got to go. It's hindering your ability to follow me." Do you have an unhealthy attachment towards physical possessions? It's just a question for every one of us to consider, myself included. If we do, he's going to see right through us, just like he did with this young man that we're reading about. Are we willing to get rid of those things that stand in between us and God? Physical possessions have the potential to get in our way. Now, I'll say this is not always the case. We can certainly have nice things. We just don't want them getting in our way. We don't want the clutter. We shouldn't trust in our own riches or completely rely upon ourselves and our own resources. I think that's one of the reasons why Jesus told this young man what he did. He didn't want him thinking that he could rely on himself. We should put our complete trust in God. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. We're about to see Jesus send off the 12 apostles. Matthew chapter 10, starting in the first verse. Just want to take a moment to to build upon this same principle of not relying on our own resources. Matthew chapter 10, verse 1. And when he'd called his 12 disciples to him, he gave them power over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these. First, Simon, who's called Peter, and Andrew his brother. James, the son of Zebedee, and John his brother. Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas, Matthew the tax collector. James, the son of Alphaeus and Lebbaeus, whose surname was Thaddeus. Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, who also betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out and commanded them, saying, "Do not go into the way of the Gentiles, and do not enter a city of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, preach, saying, the kingdom of heaven's at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out demons. Freely you've received, freely give. Provide neither gold nor silver nor copper in your money belts, nor bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staffs, for a worker is worthy of his food." So the basic takeaway with this is that he didn't want them worrying so much about how God was going to provide for them. Don't take anything with you. If you trust and rely on God, you can be sure that he's going to take care of you. You won't go hungry. Even King David said that. He said he's never seen the righteous begging for bread. Basically, God promises to take care of our needs. We should not try to take those matters into our own hands and fully rely upon only ourselves. That's the point that's being made here. It's a lesson in trusting in God, not in our own resources. Just like he told this rich young man here, or just like he had told the rich young man, he's telling his 12 disciples here essentially the same instruction. Leave the physical possessions behind. I don't want you trusting in those. They're clutter that's just going to get in the way. And unlike the first man that we looked at, the apostles did listen to him. As you continue along with the story, we see how that promise was fulfilled. They were cared for. We're here in Matthew. Let's go back to chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6, where it has even more to say about physical possessions. Matthew 6:19. Again, the lesson we learn here is that physical possessions should never come between us and God. But further comments are made here in 6:19. Matthew 6:19. "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." I think we understand these concepts. A pricey garment can be eaten up by moths. Precious metals or precious coins can corrode. They can be stolen by thieves. These sorts of possessions are temporary in nature. We should not allow them to get in the way of that very important relationship with God. That's physical clutter, which we saw in full effect with that first account we looked at. But Jesus brings up an interesting thing here in verse 20, treasures in heaven. What exactly are these things? What are treasures in heaven? How do we lay them up for ourselves? Physical belongings are not treasures in heaven. That's obvious, right? They can serve a need for us. They can be enjoyed in this life. But when he talks about treasures in heaven, these things are spiritual in nature, and they're not physical. They're not physical, but they are eternal. The pleasures and joys that treasures in heaven afford are not temporary, like physical possessions are. They're eternal. They give joy forever, having lasting value. Principles discussed over in Psalm 16. If you'll turn to Psalm 16 with me, start reading in verse 5. Psalm 16, we're talking about treasures in heaven, picking it up in verse 5. Psalm 16:5. O Lord, you are the portion of my inheritance and my cup. You maintain my lot. The lines have fallen to me in pleasant places. Yes, I have a good inheritance. 7. I will bless the Lord who's given me counsel. My heart also instructs me in the night seasons. I've set my Lord always before me. Because he's at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Continuing on in verse 9. Therefore my heart is glad, and my glory rejoices. My flesh also will rest. It will dwell securely in hope. For you will not leave my soul in Sheol, nor will you allow your Holy One to see corruption. You will show me the path of life. In your presence is fullness of joy. At your right hand are pleasures forevermore. It's a messianic psalm here that we've just read, pointing towards the return of Jesus Christ. Putting our hope in his return, that's how we lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven. We put our hope and trust in God and his plan, the eternal promises that he gives us through his inspired word. Verses 5 and 6 there talk about inheritance. That's the kingdom of God. Verse 9, it talks about how we place our hope in that inheritance. Verse 11, pleasures forevermore. These are eternal treasures. Though these eternal treasures and our inheritance is now stored in heaven, Jesus Christ will bring them with him when he does return, when he resurrects the saints and rules with them on earth. When we're talking about clutter and having things get in the way of our relationship with God, there's really no comparison at all. No physical possession can ever be compared to what lies ahead. So if we're having a problem holding on to physical things to the point where it impacts our spiritual journey or our relationship with God, we need to follow that advice that Jesus Christ gave to that rich young man. Get rid of the clutter. Go and sell what you have, give it to the poor. You know, he didn't seem to want to follow that advice, but we can, and we should, lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Remember what the greatest commandment was, or the greatest commandment is? The Pharisees and the Sadducees came to Jesus, and they tried to fool him with a trick question. They asked him, what's the greatest commandment? And he said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. Nothing needs to come between us and our relationship with God. Instead of clinging tightly to physical things that are completely temporary in nature, that moths can eat away, or that thieves can come in and steal, instead of putting our hope and trust in those things, we should be investing our time and energy into focusing the majority of our attention on treasures in heaven. I want to go over to 2 Corinthians and see a real-life example of this approach. 2 Corinthians chapter 8. We're going to take a look at a group of people that were not focused on physical possessions. In fact, they were what you'd consider to be quite poor. Yet they were laying up for themselves treasures in heaven, fully about the work of Jesus Christ and God the Father. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, beginning in verse 1. 2 Corinthians 8, verse 1. Moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed upon the churches of Macedonia, that in a great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. I like what the Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown commentary has to say about verse 2. Their poverty had the effect not of producing stinted gifts, but of abounding in the riches of liberality. That's the polar opposite of what we saw earlier out of that rich young man. He clung to his physical possessions, unwilling to part with them. And yet, here we have these Macedonians, who were very poor, give with liberality. But what exactly did they give? What were they focused on? Verse 3. For I bear witness that according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministering to the saints. And not only as we had hoped, but they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. So the context here is focusing on a collection that was taken up for the brethren. But what I want to draw our attention to is the manner in which these Macedonians gave. What they gave, as well as how they gave it. Notice what we just read here. They first gave themselves to the Lord. You see, they recognized that physical possessions weren't what was most important. And verse 3 there, they freely and willingly gave. Yes, physical possessions are helpful, and they're important to a degree, but above everything else is that relationship with God. They first gave themselves to the Lord. I just love that, and I think so does the Apostle Paul. You can kind of see that with the tone of his letter here. Very pleased with that mindset, continuing on in verse 6. So we urge Titus that as he'd begun, so he would also complete this grace in you as well. But as you abound in everything, in faith and speech, in knowledge, in all diligence, and in your love for us, see that you abound in this grace also. Now, we see that they're encouraging others to follow that example as well. He's saying, hey, look at this example that they're setting, and we'd like for you to consider following that same pattern of behavior. And really, I think that can be applied to every one of us here today as well. When we're talking about removing that physical clutter, removing those things that get in the way of our relationship with God, the first place to start is to freely and willingly give ourselves over to the process, to lay up for ourselves treasures in heaven by first offering ourselves in service to God, putting our trust in Him. I think it's an interesting analogy to make, an interesting study to look at, comparing this rich young man that asked Christ to follow him, who declined doing so simply because he was too attached to physical belongings. Comparing that with these Macedonians, who were, by all accounts, did not have the same resources he did, and yet they freely gave themselves to God in service to him. Which example should we follow? I think the answer is clear. We should be laying up for ourselves treasures in heaven and not clinging to those physical temporary things. We should not allow them to get in the way. But you know, as I was reflecting on that, and as I was studying this recently, I couldn't help but think about what goes on between my ears. We talk about all these physical possessions, all this clutter that we have lying around. But there is so much more to it than just having a stack of physical belongings, of your worldly possessions. So we've talked about physical clutter, but we can have spiritual clutter just as easily. What I'm talking about is clutter in our minds, spiritual clutter that gets in the way of our relationship with God. And truthfully, I think this is much more dangerous than the physical stuff. It's a whole lot easier to see a pile of physical possessions and to deal with that than it is to take a full inventory of what's going on in our minds. I shared some of my own personal stories with you about the moving process. Imagery of piles and piles of boxes, furniture scattered all around. But you know what? I've definitely had some spiritual clutter trying to creep in on me as well. There's been a lot of thoughts that I wish were not there. Things that are quite persistent in trying to make me lose my focus on where it should be. What if we don't get the house prepared in time to sell it, to start showing it to potential buyers? You know, that's something I wasted a lot of time worrying about. As most of you know, it was on the market for 3 days and we had a formal offer. And there I was worrying about that. So I spent so much time worrying, and it was wasted time. such a wonderful blessing to have that offer and to see God taking care of it. What if we can't find a new house that fits our needs and our budget? What if it ends up being in a really bad school district? Again, God took care of those things too. Another blessing that we've received from Him. What if I can't get this sermon prepared in time for the Sabbath? What if? What if? You see what I mean? Lots of clutter creeping in there and getting in the way. I want to take a moment to go over to Luke chapter 10. Luke chapter 10. Let's look at how this spiritual clutter can get in the way and distract us from where our focus really needs to be. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. It's a familiar account to us comparing the behavior of two sisters, but it's a very fitting example to review when we're talking about spiritual clutter. Luke chapter 10, verse 38. Luke 10, 38. Now it happened as they went that he entered a certain village, and a certain woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. So this is Christ. And she had a sister called Mary, who also sat at Jesus' feet and heard his word. Verse 40, but Martha was distracted with much serving, and she approached him and said, Lord, do you not care that my sister's left me to serve alone? Therefore, tell her to help me. Have you ever wondered how long it took Martha to make that comment? I wonder things like that. It's just a bit of speculation on my part, but I would imagine that she didn't say that right away. No, I suspect that she stewed over this for quite a while, that spiritual clutter piling up in her mind, negative thoughts beginning to run rampant. We've got all this stuff that we've got to take care of, and my sister is just sitting on her duff, not doing anything to help me. Why must I be the one that has to do all the work? Again, a bit of speculation on my part, but I do think that she stewed over that situation before we see her outburst. Jesus, tell her to help me. Can't you see that we have stuff that needs to be taken care of? Verse 41, and Jesus answered and said to her, Martha, Martha, you're worried and troubled about many things. She had all this clutter in her mind, and that clutter was getting in the way. It was causing her to spend too much time focusing on the wrong thing. Verse 42, but one thing is needed, and Mary has chosen that good part, which will not be taken away from her. Back to the treasures of heaven again, aren't we? The good part that shall not be taken away from her. So we see a clear contrast here. Mary had the right priorities. She was focused on learning from and strengthening that relationship with Jesus Christ, while Martha was distracted. She unfortunately let that clutter pile up and just completely get in the way. You ever done that? You know, over in Ecclesiastes, it talks about how whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might, for there's no work or knowledge or wisdom in the grave, which is where you're going. It's important to work hard. That's a biblical principle. And in order to work hard, you have to be focused on the task at hand. But what we're talking about here today is how that should never impede our relationship with God. That's what we see here with the example of Martha. She got so caught up in the clutter, majoring in the minors, focusing on those minor details rather than staying focused on Jesus and his teachings. And you know, if we're not careful, this very same thing can happen to us. I've shared my story with you. Am I going to let small details related to this situation we're facing get in my way? Am I going to let that clutter negatively impact my relationship with God? Or will I do something about that? Will I remove that clutter and make sure that my focus is where it should be? Choose that good part, laying up treasures in heaven, things of eternal value. How about you? Do you have anything in your own life that may be a similar situation, where there's the potential of getting so wrapped up in things that you've become distracted. Like Jesus said to this woman here, "Martha, Martha, you're worried and troubled about many things. Maybe it's not a move that you're facing. Maybe it's a health concern. Maybe it's interpersonal conflict with a family member or a friend. Maybe it's even the cost of goods that are skyrocketing. Inflation running wild, but at the same time, the income remains flat. How are we going to pay for these things?" Again, biblical principles tell us that taking care of these things is important, but what I'm pointing out today is we don't want to let them get in the way, distract our focus from where it should be. That's what we're talking about. Spiritual clutter that gets in the way really comes down to priorities. Let's go to Proverbs chapter 4. Proverbs 4, we not too long ago came back from Camp Lone Star. One of the things we do at preteen camp is each dorm has a couple of scriptures that they memorize during their time at camp. We work on it, and then the final presentation, they will recite those scriptures to the parents that are out in the audience. And this passage contains one of the verses that my dorm worked on. They did such a great job. I was so proud of them. Really did a good job with it. I want to start in Proverbs 4, verse 20. Proverbs chapter 4, verse 20. "My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your eyes. Keep them in the midst of your heart." Think about this from the perspective of spiritual clutter. Don't let anything get in the way, causing you to lose focus. Verse 22, "For their life to those who find them, and health to all their flesh. Keep your heart with all diligence, for out of it springs the issues of life." Verse 24, "Put away from you a deceitful mouth, and put perverse lips far from you. Let your eyes look straight ahead, and your eyelids look right before you. Ponder the path of your feet, and let all your ways be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Remove your foot from evil." Think about these words within the story of Martha and Mary, with Jesus Christ being a guest in their home. Martha was distracted by things that seemed urgent at the time, taking care of minor details related to hosting guests in your home. And yet Mary's focus was very different, just like what we've read here in verse 25. "Let your eyes look straight ahead." She was focused on what she saw, or what we saw described earlier as the good part. She wasn't distracted by spiritual clutter. And, you know, I think that's something that we should think about, too. Martha was distracted by many things. Her eyes were not looking straight ahead. They seemed to be looking all around, focused on all the wrong things. But that wasn't the case for her sister Mary. That's been a gentle reminder for me personally. Perhaps it's something for you to consider as well. Where's our focus? What should our focus be on? Ponder the path of your feet and let all your ways be established. We should be very careful about where we allow our mind to go and what we allow it to focus on. When we analyze our thoughts, do we have to meander around all kinds of spiritual clutter? Or do we see a clear path to follow? God's word is life to those who find it. It's life to all flesh. Are we taking advantage of the access that we've been given? Akin to Mary sitting and listening to Jesus Christ, laying up for ourselves treasures in heaven. Or are we distracted, focused on spiritual clutter that we have lying around in our minds, similar to Martha, worried, troubled about many things? For the next verse, I want to go to Psalm 90. Psalm 90. We are going to make a transition here. I'm still going to talk about spiritual clutter, but from a slightly different perspective. Psalm 90, verse 10. Psalm 90, verse 10. The days of our lives are 70 years, and if by reason of strength, they're 80 years. Yet their boast is only labor and sorrow, for it's soon cut off and we fly away. Who knows the power of your anger? For as the fear of you, so is your wrath. Verse 12. So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. What we can take away from this passage here is that life is temporary. In the grand scheme of things, 70 or 80 years is not all that much. It's short, soon cut off. And the psalmist is beseeching God here to teach us to number our days. In other words, help us to recognize that life is short and to make the most of these days that we are given. As we go out and make the most of these days, we don't want to have any clutter getting in our way. We've already looked at worry and how that can impact our focus, but there are other ways that we can be distracted as well. Recently came across an article that was published online. The website's actually called Finances Online, and it's geared toward business leaders and the decisions that they face in the business climate. There was a recent article published about social media that I found quite interesting. Marketing's a big deal for most businesses. They want to know how people use social media so they can maximize the revenue they're bringing in. And this article published on financesonline.com shared a lot of research about just how much time the average person spends on social media. The average American citizen spends just over 2 hours every day on social media. That's the average. For millennials, it jumps up to about 3.8 hours a day. For Gen Z, it's even higher. It's 4.5 hours. 4.5 hours every single day. And again, that's the average. What about each one of us within the Church of God? As we number our days, recognizing that time is short, how much time are we spending aimlessly wandering around social media? I include myself with that question. There's a benefit to social media, of course. Even the church uses it to spread the gospel. So I'm not saying that it's all bad, but I'm just posing the question, how much time are we spending on it when perhaps that time might be better served elsewhere? Again, the concept mentioned here in Psalm 90, teach us to number our days. Let me get back to those social media statistics that I shared. Altogether, over the span of a person's entire lifetime, how much time do you think they spend on social media? I'm talking about when you add up all those days, every single day of their life. According to this research that I found, they say the average person spends 6 years and 8 months on social media. 6 years, 8 months. Isn't that wild? I mean, we're talking about a human lifetime being 70 to 80 years, according to Psalm 90, and over 6.5 of those years we're spending on social media. Really hits home to me, and it causes me to question my own time management, how much time am I spending on that? Is that spiritual clutter that's getting in my way? Time that's better spent being more productive. I want to go back to that concept of laying up for ourselves treasures in heaven. Let's go to Romans 13. Looking at this from the viewpoint of time management. Romans 13, having no spiritual clutter sitting in our way, focus on the proper things that we should be focused on. Romans 13, starting in verse 11. Romans 13:11. And do this, knowing the time, that now it's high time to awake out of sleep. For now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. The night's far spent, the day's at hand. Therefore, let us cast off the works of darkness, and let us put on the armor of light. Verse 13, let us walk properly, as in the day, not in revelry and drunkenness, not in lewdness and lust, not in strife and envy, but put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill its lusts. So I certainly don't want to take this verse out of context. It's clearly talking about avoiding sin. Time's short, salvation's near. Walk in light, not in darkness. But I think the same principle applies to our time management as well. Let me read verse 11 again. Knowing the time, that now it's high time to awake out of sleep, for now our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. If time is short, what should we be spending our time on? Is it really productive to spend over 6 years of my lifetime scrolling through endless social media feeds? Or would we be better served putting on the armor of light, strengthening our relationship with God? I'll speak for myself here. If I'm spending 6 years of my life trying to find the bottom of a social media feed, endlessly scrolling, then I'm afraid I have some decluttering that I need to take care of. How about you? How does that statistic land in your mind? How does that make you feel? Hebrews chapter 11 is known as the faith chapter, detailing out certain individuals that live their lives in dedication to God, trusting in His plan for their lives. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, Moses. You know the names. I won't list them all out. But I would like to read that final verse out of Hebrews chapter 11, if you'll turn there with me. Hebrews 11, 39. Living a life of faith. Hebrews 11, 39. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. God having provided something better for us, that they should not be made perfect apart from us. They did not receive the promise. Of course, we know the promise is that spiritual resurrection in the kingdom of God, but it says they did not receive the promise, and they won't receive it apart from us. They should not be made perfect apart from us. It's the same thread that we've been talking about this afternoon. They laid up for themselves treasures in heaven. They believed in these treasures wholeheartedly, knowing that something better lies ahead. We share that same desire to inherit the kingdom of God. Now, obviously certain details weren't known at the time. I believe that New Testament Christians have more information to work with than certain individuals of the Old Testament. You know, you compare Acts chapter 2 with Joel chapter 2. You know, there's certain things like that. But it's the same promise. The same inheritance shared among every one of us. What should we do with all of this? I want to transition to the next chapter, Hebrews 12, verse 1. What do we do with this information? Hebrews 12, verse 1. Therefore, we also, since we're surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, all those names in chapter 11, as well as all the other examples that have gone before us, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that's set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Let us lay aside every weight. Let us declutter. Remove all those obstacles that stand in our way, all that stuff that piles up and sits in the way, as we've talked about today. It could be a number of things that get between us and God. A number of things can negatively impact our relationship with Him, whether you're talking about physical possessions that we cling to, like that rich young ruler, or if we're talking about spiritual clutter that collects in between our ears, worry, anxiety, all sorts of things can creep in there and draw our attention and focus away from where it should be. You can even make the case that social media has a way of doing that. It's a wonderful tool that we can use to communicate with one another. It's definitely a blessing for the church, a tool that's used to preach the gospel to the world, a world that desperately needs it. But if we're not careful, social media can also be a bad thing. It can become spiritual clutter that causes us to waste time, not making the most of it. So these are just a few things that I've shared with you today. Perhaps you might take some time to study it in your own personal time to see if there are more areas that come to your mind, areas where it would be very good to get in there and declutter.